Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with today's activities inside and outside of the Supreme Court as the nine justices take up the constitutionality of the President's Affordable Care Act. Elizabeth Wydra, the Chief Counsel of the Constitutional Accountability Center, joins us. She has frequently participated in Supreme Court litigation and we will assess the argument so far and the likely outcome. Then Dr. Margaret Flowers joins us. She is a pediatrician and an organizer with the National Occupation of Washington, D.C., and a congressional fellow for Physicians for a National Healthcare Program and a member of the board of Healthcare Now. She'll be rallying tomorrow, and people rally today on the steps of the Supreme Court in support of an amicus brief she and 50 other doctors filed with the Supreme Court to strike down the individual mandate and institute single payer now. Then finally, we will look into the President's remarks today, both on the record and off, in South Korea at a global summit focusing on securing fissile nuclear material. John Steinbrenner, Professor of Public Policy at the University of Maryland and the Chairman of the Board of the Arms Control Association, joins us to discuss the state of both nuclear arms reductions and efforts at nuclear non-proliferation. Joining us now is Elizabeth Wydra, the Chief Counsel of the Constitutional Accountability Center. She frequently participates in Supreme Court litigation and has argued several important cases in the federal courts of appeals. Previously, she was an attorney working with former Stanford Law School Dean Kathleen Sullivan in the firm's Supreme Court Appellate Practice. Welcome to Background Briefing, Elizabeth Wydra.
It's great to be here with you, Ian.
And you were inside the court today, and it seems to me that, at least from what I understand, most of the discussions today were about an obscure 1867 law, the Anti-Injunction Act.
Yeah, that's right. You know, today was really sort of the prelude to the main event, which will be tomorrow when the court hears arguments on the constitutionality of the minimum coverage provision, or the so-called individual mandate, and Wednesday, when the court will hear argument on whether the Affordable Care Act's expansion of Medicaid to cover approximately 16 million more low-income Americans is constitutional. But the issue today, while it may be a little drier than some of the issues to come, is very important, because what it really was about was whether the challenge to the Affordable Care Act and the mandate in particular was premature. This old law that you talked about, the Anti-Injunction Act, says that generally, if you want to challenge the legality of a tax, you have to pay the tax first and then sue and collect a refund if you're successful. So because the Obama administration, as one of its many arguments in support of the constitutionality of the mandate, has argued that the mandate can be upheld as a tax, then arguably that law, the Anti-Injunction Act, would come into play and would mean that the mandate couldn't be challenged until it goes into effect in 2014, or when the person pays the penalty for failing to comply with the mandate, probably on their 2015 tax returns.
So it seems to me that that's the only mechanism that the government has in terms of penalties. And now, I know there were lots of arguments about whether it's a penalty or a tax, but we'll get to that in a moment. But my understanding is that, I guess the way it's structured is that the only way that you can force people to buy insurance and penalize them if they don't is through their tax returns. My understanding is that there are no liens and none of the typical stuff that go on with collection agencies and such. So I'm wondering whether in fact this is a mandate, given the kind of squishy nature of it.
Right. I mean, you know, and that was explored a little bit today, because the tricky part of all of this, at least with today's argument, is that the Obama administration agrees with the 26 states who have sued to have the Affordable Care Act declared unconstitutional. Both sides agree that they don't want the Anti-Injunction Act to delay a ruling on the merits until 2014. They both just want closure on the issue and would prefer that the Supreme Court get to the actual substance of the dispute and determine whether or not the act is constitutional. So it's a little bit tricky for the Obama administration because they're in the position which they were today where they're saying, oh, it's not a tax with respect to the Anti-Injunction Act, so you don't have to pay the tax first and then sue later. Oh, but it's also a tax for the purposes of the Constitution when we talk about Congress's power to tax and spend. So the Obama administration's lawyer is doing quite a tap dance to try to get around that. But none of the justices today, this morning in court, seemed that eager to delay a ruling on the merits. I think that they understand that on both sides of the issue, people who are opposed to the law and people who support it, you know, want to know sooner rather than later whether this law is going into effect, and particularly for the millions of Americans who are already enjoying the benefits of the law, you know, millions of seniors and women who are getting preventive care for free under the Affordable Care Act, and millions of young Americans who are able to stay on their parents' insurance plan, just as two examples. You know, to have those benefits taken away from them after they've come to rely on them would be a major disappointment. And so I think that the court will probably find that there are exceptions to this rule, that even if something appears to be a tax, you challenge it after you've paid it. I think that they will find a way to get to the merits of the case. And frankly, I think that's probably a wise decision, even though this is an election year and some folks think that a decision now will be overly political.
And again, I'm speaking with Elizabeth Wider, the chief counsel of the Constitutional Accountability Center, and she has frequently participated in Supreme Court litigation and was in the Supreme Court today hearing arguments. Apparently, the Solicitor General making the arguments on behalf of the Affordable Care Act, Donald Varelli. He, as you mentioned, well, you didn't mention, but Justice Alito said to him, you know, you're arguing that a penalty is not a tax and tomorrow you're going to be back and you'll be arguing that the penalty is a tax. At one point there, apparently, he himself got a little flustered and so Breyer had to correct him, right?
Right. You know, I mean, and Justice Alito is right. Solicitor General Varelli will be back in court tomorrow, saying that the penalty for failing to comply with the individual mandate is a constitutional tax. And there is a technical argument that he made that would allow the court to say, okay, it's a tax for the constitutional purposes, but not a tax for the Anti-Injunction Act. Basically, the argument is that, well, Congress didn't say that it wanted the Anti-Injunction Act to apply, so therefore it doesn't. But it is very delicate. I think fortunately for General Verrilli, he has two other very good arguments to support the constitutionality of the mandate, because I do think from the questions today from Justice Breyer, Justice Alito, and even some of the more liberal justices like Justice Ginsburg, and Justice Kagan, there was some skepticism about whether or not the penalty that goes along with not complying with the mandate is actually a tax intended to raise revenue, et cetera, instead of a penalty that one pays for failing to engage in the conduct that the minimum coverage provision requires.
So, Elizabeth Wider, apparently it was a pretty lively day there in front of the Supreme Court. I believe at one point Justices Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Elena Kagan, and Sotomayor all started speaking at the same time, which prompted the Chief Justice to act as a kind of traffic cop. And, of course, needs to say, Clarence Thomas remained silent.
Yeah, he certainly did. You know, it was interesting that, you know, the three female justices, and I am just so thrilled that we have three female justices on the court right now because they're all brilliant and very good at what they do. They were all three very active in questioning today. And some of the more conservative justices, like Justice Scalia and in many instances, Justice Kennedy were not quite as active as they often are. Justice Scalia usually, he's usually the one talking at the same time as everyone else. But it was a lively scene inside, but I have to say, I think it was even livelier outside on the plaza outside the Supreme Court building.
Well, you had Republican presidential candidate Rick Santorum grandstanding there, and apparently you had demonstrators pro and con. The CNN has an interesting poll that say 43% of Americans approve of the law, 50% say they disapprove, but of that 50%, only 37% say they oppose the law because it's too liberal. And 10% say they oppose the measure because it's not liberal enough. And I take it all factions were out there today.
Yeah, you know, it was really civil for the most part. You know, certainly people's beliefs were passionately held, and there was a little bit of heckling, but all sides were represented. And it was quite a scene. You know, you talk about how it was kind of a circus, and then at one point I turned around and there was a cat on a leash, and then I thought, well, this really is a circus.
Well, there was a brass band, wasn't there?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Right. So there were also inside, apparently, the Attorney General, Kathleen Sebelius, the head of Health and Human Services, U.S. Senator Sessions was in there too. So what's just the atmosphere there? Because you get the feeling that this is obviously it is a big deal. Although it just is, I talked to John Dean and a few other legal scholars the other day, and they say that it's highly unlikely. I mean, so that it'll be overturned. Maybe it'll be 6-3 and upholding it or something along those lines. That seems to be the betting from those particular insiders. So how do you explain the idea that this is supposed to be a cliffhanger, but it may not be a cliffhanger?
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting. When these suits first were brought, when the litigation first was filed, you know, just moments after President Obama signed the Affordable Care Act into law, the consensus from legal scholars was that these were frivolous suits. And, you know, I think that they, I still believe that they lack legal merit, but it's, we should all be concerned that these lawsuits have gone from everyone sort of agreeing they're frivolous. In fact, Ronald Reagan's former Solicitor General, Charles Freed, said that he would eat his hat if they were successful. So have now gone to something that people think could go either way. I don't think the Constitution has any support for the arguments that these conservative leaders of 26 states are making. I think they're much more political arguments, and I think they've gained a lot of salience because the politicians making the arguments are very good at their message. But I think ultimately when it comes down to the court having to take a hard look at Supreme Court precedent from the founding to the present and the text and history of the Constitution, I really do hope that if they do not allow sort of politics to get in the way, that we will have a strong majority of justices, including, I think, several conservative justices who will uphold the law.
Well, it you know, the reason one has to be a little leery and nervous, perhaps, is because of Citizens United.
Absolutely.
They're capable of doing strange and radical things. Just in terms of, just in closing, though, I'm just personally mystified. I saw a poll the other day, or I think it was a Pew Center did a study. Most of the opposition, of course, the Republican candidates for president are all castigating Obamacare, and it's become a ritual in the primaries. But the support for repealing Obamacare, and it's tied up with all of this nonsense about him being a Muslim and not being an American, and all of the strange beliefs out there in that with that constituency. But the truth of the matter is that the red states that oppose it have the worst healthcare outcomes in the country and the lowest number of insured. So that's this part of it that I find mystifying.
I think it's very unfortunate that there's been so much misinformation being spread about the law. One of the major achievements of the law is the expansion of the Medicaid program, which provides millions and millions of Americans, the most vulnerable among us, with access to quality, affordable care. And the fact that that has been demonized into some sort of, you know, big government overreach is really sad. And I think that it's great that Americans are engaged with the Constitution. But, you know, when you have this Tea Party rhetoric about the Constitution that convinces people that, you know, beneficial laws like this are somehow, you know, contrary to our founding charter, you know, that's just wrong. And it's not wrong just as a matter of politics, although I think you make a good argument for that, but it's wrong as a matter of the Constitution. And, you know, I carry a Constitution with me, like a lot of those Tea Partiers claim they do, but what they are talking about is not what's in the Constitution. I think they're reading the Articles of Confederation, which was the sort of, you know, rough draft that we had before our founders actually wrote our enduring Constitution that gives the national government the authority to provide solutions for national problems. And that's exactly what Congress did with the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, well, it should be a part of the pursuit of happiness and the general welfare, one would think. But I thank you for joining us, Elizabeth Wydra.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Elizabeth Wydra, the chief counsel of the Constitutional Accountability Center. She frequently participates in Supreme Court litigation and has argued several important cases in the federal courts of appeals. Previously, she was an attorney working with former Stanford Law School Dean Kathleen Sullivan in the firm Supreme Court Appellate Practice, and she was in the Supreme Court today. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with Dr. Margaret Flowers, an advocate for single-payer health care.
So no one would know how tired they've grown of talking and telling their lies. All we've got, no health insurance, no cellular service, no disease they can cure. But we need more money to burn, so each person must learn the dollar amount they are worth.